This is going to be fascinating, and it's been far too long since I've had the chance to talk to David Icke. I was thinking today, I don't remember when, but it was the early 90s, somehow, somewhere, that I met David in Santa Barbara. He was staying at a friend of ours, a home, and I was invited over, and he was actually putting on a presentation in Santa Barbara that night, and I was asked if I would introduce him, and I did, and we've been, I guess, comrades, so to speak, in this battle for a long time. David, hello. How the hell are you?
Hello, Jeff. I've never been better, mate. It's really good what's happening.
Yeah. This is what we're seeing now. So many things that you talked about back then have come to pass. You really haven't missed.
Well, I mean, predicting the future is very easy unless something intervenes in the projected plan for the world, if you like. I mean,
sure.
When you look at people like Aldous Huxley, George Orwell, and others I quoted in my books, they have proved to be so accurate in what were apparently novels but weren't really,
right?
Because there is a long-term projected plan for the world, and if nothing intervenes in that plan and you can uncover it, then you can quite comfortably predict the future, sometimes in great detail. The idea, of course, the point of what you do, the point of what I do, is to reach a point of public awareness and therefore public response where you don't predict the future anymore because there is an intervention to stop it happening. And,
exactly.
You know, I'm really encouraged. I've just come back from Australia. I went on a 6-week speaking tour there.
Yeah.
And other indications that I'm getting all the time. I mean, you know, when you keep being stopped in the street, not only in your own country, but 13,000 miles away, by people who want to talk about the information, and then you look back to the early 1990s when you couldn't fill a phone box, you know that we are making progress. There's no doubt about it. I mean, we can discuss if the progress is enough yet, and of course it's not, but we are entering a different world in terms of public perception.
A hell of a lot better than a poke in the eye, as they say. We've got, we have people, and you have done so much to almost one-on-one with your live presentations, all of your speeches, to reach out and connect with people. Nothing like a live audience. And you move people. You change their lives with the information. It's not you. You're not in this for you. It's the information. It always has been. And they get it. And this, I don't know how big that percentage is. I don't know that it really matters all that much right now. The fact is that it exists, and you have played a key role in creating it, allowing these people to reach out and synthesize data they would otherwise never be able to approach. They just can't do it.
Well, what I'm also, Jeff, greatly encouraged by is not just the numbers of people now that are able to break out of what I call the postage stamp consensus or the postage stamp normal or perception of normal. It's not just the numbers who are doing that. It's the kind of people who are doing that. I mean, the people who were in the system, some still are in the system because they have to earn a living. And people whose mentality not long ago would have dismissed and dismiss this information and way of looking at the world. But now that suddenly makes sense to them, there is something happening. And I'll tell you a quick story. You know, when I started blinking into this whole thing in 1990, when I had various experiences, 1990-91, where the top of my head blew off and stuff. I, in early 1990, or through 1989, fun enough, had this feeling that I was in the BBC at the time and the national spokesman for the British Green Party. And I had this feeling that whenever I was alone, that I wasn't alone. And it got more and more and more powerful through 1989 into early 1990. And long story, I'll cut it very short. I ended up going to a psychic to see if she would pick up what the heck I was feeling around me. I didn't tell her anything was going on. Mm-hmm. And what I was told at that time was I was going to go out on a world stage and reveal great secrets. But where I'm going with this is that in those early days, the synchronicity of my life, I was bumping into a lot of psychic people in those early months. And there was a common theme that I was being told. And that was that there was a vibrational change coming, what I would call an energetic frequency information change now, that was going to act like a spiritual alarm clock. And it was going to touch the people who were more awake and less asleep first. But eventually, even those that were seriously at that time asleep to the greater reality were going to be affected by it. Now,
So the dichotomy will mitigate over time. There is a schism here now. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and I gave the name to this vibrational change, the truth vibrations, because one of the other common themes about this vibrational change that I was told was not just coming, but had already started, was that it was going to bring to the surface all that had been hidden from people. And of course, you know, you look at 1990 and you look about how many people were open to this information. Mm-hmm. You look at 1990 mm-hmm. and look how much of that we know now that we didn't know then.
Right.
And there was no evidence at that time that this was happening. But when I look at it now, and especially just coming back from Australia, which was amazing, there is a tremendous awakening going on. I mean, I'm talking in Romania in November, and I've never been to Romania. There's going to be 4,000 people there listening to a simultaneously translated presentation for 10 hours.
Wow.
I mean, there is something happening, mm-hmm. so it's mm-hmm. very encouraging, mm-hmm. despite the things that are not pleasant that are going on.
Right. Well, that's you pull more people than Hillary Clinton is pulling.
Well, that wouldn't be difficult, would it?
No. She had 150 at a gymnasium 2 weeks ago or something. God.
Crikey.
It
She'll
is.
In the phone box where I was in 1990, Sid.
Yeah. You know, when I remember sitting and talking to you that day and we had a conversation, and this was not long after, as you just said, the top of your head blew off, BBC and all that. It was a couple of years after, I guess. And I remember you were so intense with it. It was like some light had flooded into you. I mean, you were just really focused. And we had a pretty good crowd when you did speak in Santa Barbara. We had 300 people, I think. And that was pre-internet, pretty much. A lot of photocopying and passing out of stuff and telephone calling and interesting times.
I remember those early days. I mean, the audience in Santa Barbara was like a stadium compared with what I was talking to at that time. Usually,
yeah.
I mean, I talked
yeah.
to 8 people in Chicago once, and I recall, it's interesting when you kind of look back and you look at the communications that we use now. How it actually was different then. You had to use paper and pass it around as word of mouth.
That's what we were doing, yeah.
When I was in Australia this time, flying from place to place, staying in hotels on the trip, it reminded me of the first time I went to Australia in the 1990s to speak, and I was driven around Australia in the I was sitting in the back of a tiny car, going from place to place, talking to very, very few people, and then a vast journey the next day to talk to some more. And you know, in so many ways, we have moved on massively from where it started, and I'm very encouraged by what's going on.
Yeah. When you say that the top of your head blew off, that's a very interesting mental image, and it was replaced. It didn't vanish. It was replaced with you were like somebody with a beam of light running right up his spine into his head. And I don't know how you dealt with that at the BBC. What was it that triggered that head blow off image that you've just put in our minds? What was it back then that really, was it like one day you got him and said, good grief,
Well, it's quite an extraordinary story, really. And if you put it in a movie, they'd say, "Come on, that's far fetched. That would never happen." Well, it did. After I'd seen this psychic in March of 1990 and was told I was going to go out on a world stage and reveal great secrets, my life suddenly changed. At the time, I was a national presenter for the BBC, national spokesman for the Green Party.
Yeah.
Within 3 months, the BBC had not renewed my contract when it ran out, so I'd left the BBC, and I'd left the Green Party, and my life became this synchronistic journey of walking into people, information, personal experience, books that were handing me puzzle pieces. And at the early days, of course, it was bewildering. What's all this about? But then, layer upon layer, and it started to become clearer and clearer and clearer. But anyway, by the end of 1990, I'd written a book called Truth Vibrations about what was happening to me. Uh-huh. Not that I completely understood it by any means. And at the end of 1990, when the book went off to the printers, I started getting this overwhelming feeling that I needed to go to Peru. I mean, I'm sitting in England. What am I going to Peru for? But I was seeing Peru everywhere. I'd walk down the street and there'd be, you know, something in the, you know, a shop window about Peru, and then I'd turn the television on and there's something about Peru. It was everywhere.
No coincidences.
Yeah. So purely on intuition, I headed for Peru, and not knowing why I was going. Anyway, long story short, I ended up on a hill near a place called Siyustani, which is near Puno on Lake Titicaca in Peru. Uh-huh. And I walked to this kind of, it was like a circle of stones, and there's a long story leading up to it. And I walked up and stood in among these stones, and suddenly I felt like a drill going in the top of my head. I now know it was energy, and then down through my feet into the ground, and another flow coming the other way. And then my arms went out at 45 degrees, and I never had made any conscious decision to do it. And then I heard, it wasn't a voice, it was a very strong thought form, which said, it will be over when you feel the rain. And I'm standing on this hill under a cloudless Peruvian blue sky and piercing sun, and I'm hearing this, it will be over when you feel the rain. And you think, this is just crazy. Anyway, this energy got more and more and more powerful, to the point where I'm my body's literally shaking, like I'm plugged into the socket. And it went on for about 45 minutes.
You're alone there, David?
I was alone. Mm-hmm. And then eventually the guide guy who was down in the bus came up right at the end, because he wanted to know where I was. Mm-hmm. But the vast majority of that time I was alone. And what happened is I kept going in and out of conscious awareness. For instance, you know, like when you're driving a car and you can't remember the last 2 miles, that kind of thing. But then I would come back to conscious awareness while all this is going on. And I'm shaking all the time, and my arms are at 45 degrees all the time, and I didn't feel anything. When it was over, my shoulders were agony, but not while it was going on. And then at one of the points where came back to some conscious awareness, I noticed that over the distant mountains there was a light gray mist. And very, very quickly it got darker and darker, and it was clearly seriously raining over those mountains. And then over this period of 45 minutes to an hour, this enormous rainstorm came out of these mountains towards me. And as it came across, people talk about weather fronts. It was literally a straight line. I described it like pulling curtains across the land, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Or across the sky. And it was coming towards me, stair rod rain. And by this time, I can hardly stand with this energy. And then eventually this rain hit me. I mean, so fiercely, I was soaked instantly. And then the energy stopped. And My hands had energy pouring out of them for about 24 hours. My feet too. I couldn't sleep that night because of it. And then my life changed in the sense that I came back to England, and for 3 months, if you'd have asked me what planet it was on, I couldn't have told you. And it was like pressing too many keys on a computer too quickly, and the computer goes, oh, sorry, can't process this, I'm freezing. Because what was happening after that, Jeff, was that concepts, perceptions, information, insights were pouring into my conscious mind, and you know, you couldn't process them. And for 3 months, I didn't know where I was. But then after about 3 months, by which time I'm getting mass ridicule in Britain, the computer unfroze. And people were saying, I thought you'd gone mad. The media said you'd gone mad. You seem like the old David. What's happened? And I did seem like the old David. I acted the same. And I, you know, interacted with people the same, but I wasn't the old David. I could see things now that I couldn't see before. I could see dots, how dots connected, and I could see what was being said, even though the words weren't saying it in terms of what politicians were saying and people like that.
Sure.
My perceptions changed dramatically, and the journey began. And not long after that, I came across you, of course, in Santa Barbara. That's how I got there.
You really took a beating in the beginning from your colleagues and peers and the corrupt media. It wasn't going to give you a chance at all. They just nailed you. And I watched that. I remember that. I've seen accounts of it, and it was really ugly. But I guess the inner strength that you had, I don't know what we call it, cosmic wisdom, whatever. That, like I say, it was like you were light. You were almost a light being when we talked and had that day together, and then that evening, and it was clear that something unusual had happened to you. Now, you never really thought about this stuff before the top of your head blew off.
No, absolutely not. I mean, I've always been a rebel. I've been a rebel since I was a kid. I've always questioned authority since I was a kid. I mean, authority had to command respect by its action, not demand it just because it was authority. I've always been like that. But that period of what it was historic levels of ridicule and abuse in the media was fantastic for me because, you know, life is like life to the conscious mind is like canoeing down a river. The conscious mind can only see the next turn, but deeper levels of ourselves can see the whole river from source to sea. So what appears to be a disaster to the conscious mind is actually a wonderful gift to the expanded awareness. I said many times, life so often gives us our greatest gifts, brilliantly disguised as our worst nightmares. And what that did for me was clear me of the prison that most people live in, which is the fear of what other people think. You know, when you're under that historic level of constant ridicule, when you can't walk down any street without being laughed at, when you can't go in a bar because there's uproar of ridicule, then when you stand in front of an audience of students and you can't speak for like 5 minutes because of the noise and the ridicule and the stuff,
you were a free man, a free soul, a free spirit, and they sense that. And they didn't like that. It scared them. It made them feel very ill at ease. Who is this guy? And that's why I think you were pounded and abused so badly. You were free.
Yeah, well, I think because we live in such an inverted world, because of the way it's systematically constructed, people are frightened of freedom. They're frightened of spontaneity. Yeah. They're frightened of people who are different. It's always been the same throughout known human history.
Yep.
Because it's one of the things I talk about on the world tour. It's when you look at why people have such a myopic view of everything, you then look at the process of what we call life. You come out of the womb, and immediately your perceptions are influenced by your parents who've been through the system you're about to go through. You then, in a ludicrously short time after coming into this world, you're sitting at a desk with an authority figure telling you what is, what isn't, when you have to be there, when you can leave, when you can eat. And this goes on all the way through your formative years, where you are given the state's version of reality. This is the point. It's about what is, what isn't, what's possible, what's not possible. And then after you've gone out of the programming system called education, you then go into the institutions, you go into journalism or politics or science or medicine, whatever, and you take with you that core programming, that core download of the perception of normal, what I call the postage stamp normal, the postage stamp consensus. Mm-hmm. And this then defends itself from all borders, because you first of all have peer pressure to conform, because your peers have been through the same download and accepted it. And anyone who questions the download version of normal is not normal. And what is normal? Normal is just what we normally experience. That's what is all it is, and what we normally believe. And so you then have the mainstream media and much of the alternative media, I have to say, that also supports the normal in many, many ways.
Correct.
All this information that you're receiving throughout your life is downloading that normal, a version of normal, and then constantly confirming that download is right, that download is how things are. And so when people come along and they, people like me are not just challenging 9/11, we're challenging absolutely every perception and assumption right down to the fundamentals of what reality is. When someone's doing that, well, they're either mad or bad, because you can't handle it, because it's so far off your normal. And therefore, they've got to be mad, because you're normal. So they're saying something completely different. They must be mad. That's the definition. But what is happening now?
Let me say, David, hold. Yeah, let me say one thing about what you just made so clear. Normal, the download of normal, is really the imposition of limits, barriers, and parameters that we are supposed to stay in to be, quote, successful in life.
Exactly.
That's normal, correct?
That's normal. I mean, I tell you, there was a little news story on the BBC website the other day. We've just had a little holiday. We call them bank holidays in this country. It's a period of about 3 days. Mm. And it said that... shopping was down 4% over the bank holiday, and it was kind of a bad thing because it's bad for the economy. And you know, the point I made on that was, so fewer people buying things they overwhelmingly don't need with money they overwhelmingly don't have is bad. That's good. But you see, what has happened is everything's inverted. Everything's upside down. But the upside down is how things normally are. Thus, that is normal. I mean, what is normal? You were born in the outback of Australia. Your normal is never seeing anybody and never seeing a car. You are born in downtown LA. Your normal is never not seeing people and never not seeing vehicles passing. And it's just the normal that you experience. Now, what the system does, what the program does, is it gives you a version of normal, which is how society is run on that basis. And so your normal is that myopic vision of mm-hmm. possibility. Mm-hmm. And that's what where people live in their heads from cradle to grave. And this is so important. This is the absolute fundamental of how the few control the many. You can't do it physically to billions of people. You have to control their perceptions, because their perceptions of self, reality, and the world and world events leads to what they'll support, what they won't support, what they'll challenge, what they won't challenge. It leads to everything. Who they condemn, who they blame, who they don't blame, it all comes from perception. And what we're looking at, this, the whole bottom line of this conspiracy, it's a perception deception. It's a manipulation of perception. And so the revolution is not stockpiling weapons and fighting the bad guys. It's actually a revolution of perception, because from that revolution of perception comes a revolution of action, and therefore a revolution of change.
Perception management, it's all about perception control. And once that is shaken or cracked, and the paradigm begins to weaken, people begin to push against those cracks and they want to move out. It's not normal for them to be held cradle to grave in such a constricted state. I completely agree. This is, and what you've just spelled out in the last 10 minutes is really the key to virtually everything and the liberation of our planet, our people, our species. We have been so engineered into perception prison. It's not funny. We got five corporations now here in the U.S. running 95 to 98% of the media. It's no contest. It's no contest. Cell phones, smartphones, we can go down the list. It's no contest. They own these poor people. I'm wondering if many of them really are, I don't want to use the word salvageable, if any of them can be retooled given the liberation of the kind of messages you bring. I think in some cases these people are so beholden and so afraid to step out of their reality and their programming and their download that they can't do it. They're not the ones that you need to spend your time with. The ones that you talk to, they get it, and they come to you seeking that license to go into areas they're not supposed to go.
Yeah, well, I'm coming to America in a few days to talk in New York and Los Angeles and San Francisco, and I'll be very, very interested to look at what is happening there, while being there.
Oh, yeah.
And in terms of what's going on in the election, because we've reached a point a natural kind of point, really, in the way that not just American politics, but that's an outstanding example, but where politics was going to end up. We've ended up here with two candidates that the vast majority of Americans would rather not be voting for. It's just the way that this whole perception of running countries and running societies, the way that the people have taken that download, that you have to have this hierarchical structure with someone at the top that we have now. We're sold all over the world, because when you look at politics, the way that people see it and take it seriously is extraordinary, given decades and decades of experience. We have a situation in every country, and it's so easy to stitch up. We have a situation in every country where basically two parties, sometimes three, mostly two, can form a government. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is you vote for party A and you don't like what they do when they get into government, so you want to get rid of them. So what do? You vote for party B. You see them in power. You don't like what they've done in government, so how do you get rid of them? You have to vote for party A again. Do you know something? I spoke in Ukraine in 2011.
Wow.
And the president of Ukraine at that time was the guy they threw out in the Orange Revolution in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Because what had happened is they threw him out with a Soros-manipulated coup, And then they put this other guy in to replace him, and they didn't like what he did. And so when they came to change the government, the only way they could change the government was vote for the other party, which was still headed by the guy they threw out. So he was voted back in. You couldn't make it up. But this is what we've got a situation now where, once again, you've got two candidates, and whichever one gets in, the same things will happen, despite the rhetoric of Trump. And, of course, you've got Hillary Clinton, who is I would call her evil, except that evil would sue for defamation of character.
And then you've got
this other guy who will say anything in the moment and then say something else in another moment.
You know, that brings up one issue, and that's no matter what country you go in, and you've been to so many of them, all politicians, professional politicians, are essentially interchangeable. Trump, at least, is not a professional, polished politician. He's a little different. He's got a little different texture. You go to Ukraine, Viktor Yushchenko was the former president, politician, third president of Ukraine. He was dumped in February 2010, I guess, or something like that, after this country spent $5 billion on this coup to get rid of it. And we do that all the time. Not the average American, but the cabal that runs this joint. So, you were over there. You saw it. Those poor people have paid the price. The west of Ukraine now is just in tatters. The east, Donbass, very brave people over there. It's interesting to watch. Go ahead.
What we have is this, classic corporate politics where they have to sell a candidate a certain way, not least because there's no difference between them in all the fundamentals, thus they have to invent them. So we had Obama. He was the first black president. Well, that went well for black people, didn't it?
Great.
Because he wasn't the first black president in that sense. What he was the first black front man in the White House for the
That's
cabal
right.
that
yeah.
used white men up to that point.
Yep.
And now we're being sold this ludicrous idea that Hillary Clinton being president, the first woman president, will be good for women. No, it won't. I mean,
unbelievable.
Who's our bosom buddies? The Saudi royal family. They really support women's rights, don't they? And so we're now being sold this idea that women must support Clinton because she's the first woman. She's not. We're first woman president. Not in that sense. She's the first woman puppet in the White House, replacing the first black puppet controlled by the same network that has used white men up to that point.
Correct.
And it's people get caught in these sales pitches when if you just took a deep breath and took a step back, they'd see it was all a farce and all a circus, which is what it is every time.
The soap opera. She has no credentials in terms of being a women's rights activist.
No.
And protector. Look what she did with Bill Clinton's victims. Come on. I mean, look, the Clintons in and of themselves are so despicable, I didn't want to spend time on them. But she's actually been involved with paying these women off to keep them quiet because of her alleged husband, such as he is not, and his sexual attacks on them. And this goes on and on. She's Margaret Sanger. She praises Margaret Sanger, the eugenicist. Come on.
Yeah.
None of this stuff adds up. And then you look at her standing up talking about women's rights and all. We need a one. Give me a break. It's so schizoid. It's off the charts.
Yeah, when you look at the American political scene, particularly since the 1980s, I mean, it's kind of breathtaking when you look at it. Because, first of all, what most people won't realize, because the mainstream media won't tell them, is that the Clintons and the Bushes are extremely close bosom buddies. They were running drugs through the MENA airstrip in Arkansas when Clinton was Bill Clinton was governor. That was in my books in the mid 1990s.
I remember tracking
the Clintons a long time. I mean, crikey! Yeah. I mean, they've not just got skeletons in the cupboard; they've got old cemeteries. These people, and what What we are looking at, therefore, is this idea that America is free because anyone can become president. Well, let's go back to 1980. It was Reagan Bush, which in fact was Bush Reagan in terms of the power in the White
indeed,
House.
Indeed, indeed.
So Father Bush had two terms as a de facto president. He then had one term as the official president. He's then replaced by two terms of Clinton, who is replaced by two terms of Boy Bush, who is
the village
replaced
idiot.
By Obama, who now could be replaced very likely by another Clinton. I mean,
there are
more than 300 million people in America. How can that be unless it is absolutely contrived? And if it's contrived, who's contriving it? These are the questions that people need to ask. And when you ask them, the answers are very different to the world that people think they live in.
Yeah. It's all about asking the right questions. People just don't ask. They react, and they do. I remember when you used to, your message of your classic message of problem, reaction, solution is so rudimentary to understanding organized societal life on this planet. It's how the game is played. And all these clubs, all these so-called religions, political parties, it doesn't matter. They're simply control mechanisms to enable the download to be completed. And at whatever color paint the download is, it doesn't matter. It's still a download of barriers, parameters, and limits. And you're not supposed to go out. You're supposed to stay inside.
Yeah, that's why the real revolution is stepping outside of those parameters and living your life outside of that, speaking your truth outside of that, doing what you feel is right outside of that, rather than being cowed into just following the normal out of fear of the consequences of not following the normal. I mean, it starts with parents. I mean, our parents set parameters that are of great limitation on children in terms of what they can think, what they can do, what they can say. It starts right at the earliest time in people's lives and goes all the way through. And what I'm finding, Jeff, is a phenomenon that I'm finding in more and more people. So something is happening. It's people who have reached the point where they've been through this system. They've followed the carrot. I must be someone. Do this. I must achieve this.
False gods. Absolutely.
Gotta. And they've kind of reached that point where they were aiming for. They might be the CEO. They might have made a few bob. And they're at this point, maybe in their 50s, actually some even earlier, and they're saying, what was it all about? Okay,
yes.
I've strived all my life. You know, John Lennon said, life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans. And suddenly they're there, but they don't feel any different. And it's like, you know, it's been a hoax. Well, that's exactly what it is. It's a hoax. It's putting that carrot just in front of you. This is what you need to do. This is what life is about. It's about striving. It's about achievement. It's about being someone. It's about being seen as being someone. It's about fame. It's about money. It's about power, all these things. And you follow the carrot, and then eventually you get there. Well, most people don't get there because the system won't let them, but some people get there, and when they get there, they don't feel any different. And all their life has passed, and they don't really want to admit to themselves, first of all, that it has been a hoax, because they don't want to admit they've been hoaxed, and their life has been chasing a dream that turned out to be not a dream at all. But there's more and more people that I'm coming across, and like I say, the numbers are so common now that there is something happening. People are having this reassessment. What is life about? And once you, again, you said a few minutes ago, it's about asking the right questions. That's exactly what it is. And when you start asking those questions, yes, what is it all about? Why do we do this? Then the system starts to crumble. in your perception of it, because the answers are we do it for no good reason other than
we're told to do it.
A few to control the many. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so good to hear you say this. You travel, you have contact with people face to face. I don't. I live in a little thimble. And to hear you say that people are getting it, and I'm also hearing you say that they're getting it in a very broad brushed common sense way that will give them a new, let's just call it a new beginning, a new bedrock, they're formulating a new bedrock from which that they can operate for the rest of their lives and look at things and see. I think people, from what I'm gathering, are seeing through the lie. And if ever in this country people trust the mainstream media again, shame, shame on them. It has been exposed, you and I know it, and most of our listeners tonight know it, as the biggest hoax, fraud, control mechanism, dirty, down and dirty control mechanism that you could ever see. And they are liars, they are whores, they're prostitutes, they're the worst. And you know why I walked away from television news after 12 years. I could see where it was going. Mass mind control. Disgusting. And so I started this program because the human mind is still somewhat, it does enjoy sanctity, and that's what I wanted to go after. Same with you.
Well, the thing about perception, where does perception come from? It comes from, yes, experience, which gives you a perception through experience. But and experience is a form of information, if you break it down. And the rest of perception comes from information that we call information, which is from the media. It's from the laughingly, bravely, ludicrously called education system.
Yeah,
and so your perceptions are formed by the information you receive. And so if you are seeking to program perceptions, then you have to control information that people receive, because that's the only way you're going to do it. And what the alternative media has done, and of course, people talk about the alternative media as if it's one thing. It's not. It's a vast, vast spectrum from, on one side, imperceptibly different from almost from the mainstream, across to those that are questioning every facet of, of belief and normal. But the alternative media has, in within that spectrum, offered people another information source, another way of looking at the world and world events. And the mainstream postage stamp normal version is so ludicrous, so limited, so just without credibility that it cannot stand the challenge of an alternative view. This is why mystics and seers and mavericks of various kinds throughout human history have always been seen as dangerous by those in authority at the time. Why? Because they're offering another way of looking at everything that is different from what the authorities are trying to sell, whether it's religion, in the past or whatever. It's another way of looking at things. And that is the most dangerous thing that can possibly happen to that which is seeking to impose and program a perception, alternative ways of looking at things.
Right.
But what I'm finding very encouraging is, you know, well, of course, the mass ridicule and all this stuff 26 years ago, 25 years ago, it was clear there weren't many who were open to looking at the world in a different way. But that has changed. That has changed dramatically. And the kind of people that, I mean, the moment, you know, I'm going into cafes for a cup of tea to read me paper, but I don't read me paper because people are coming up to me all the time wanting to talk to me about this information.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all across the spectrum of society. That there is something happening. And I think that, you know, 3 years from now, we are going to be in a very different place in terms of the numbers of people who are saying, hold on a minute, this is making sense. What's going on? And this is the other thing. This is a very important aspect of this. I said many, many years ago that there's going to come a point where that which has manipulated from the hidden will have to appear in the scene. Because if you're going to transform human society in a certain way, there comes a point where it has to become obvious that that's what's going on. Not necessarily that there is a hidden hand behind it, but the fact that society is changing very demonstrably, and to the point where people are going, hold on a minute, what's going on here? And this manifests, of course, in the increasing concern about the level of surveillance and what have you. And we're at that point now where the hidden is actually having to appear in the scene in changes in society. And that is making more and more people question what's going on. I mean, the idea that, I mean, when you look at the amount of money that's spent on surveillance and all that side of it, and destruction of privacy, and then you look at the number of people who are affected by terrorism in the West in terms of numbers,
right,
and compare that with the number of people that die in road accidents, number of people that
45,000 a year, David, 45,000 a year die in the U.S. on the roads.
Yeah, and so it's not about protecting life, this terrorism spending. Of course it's not this mass surveillance and control system. It's about building a control system that will prevent rebellion by the masses, if you like, against the less than 1%.
Is it not an admission that the mainstream media can't do the job anymore and they've got to have surveillance to back it?
Yeah, well, they clearly they can't. But see, what I'm saying in the books and in this world tour is that where we're heading, and what we've been heading all along, is what I call the Hunger Games society. If people can see a pyramid, and at the top of the pyramid is the less than 1%, the bottom of the pyramid is basically the rest of humanity, and in the middle is this fierce, merciless police state, military police state control system to hold that quo so it doesn't move. And what's happening is this police state structure is being put into place under the guise of protecting people from terrorism because they know that because more and more it's becoming obvious and will become more and more obvious that this structure is being put into place, that there's going to come a point where a significant number of the target population are going to see what's happening. And they want this structure in place, this police state structure, to stop that rebellion when it comes along. That's why we're seeing what we're seeing. We're seeing the less than 1% sucking up the wealth of the world. We're seeing more and more people falling into that poverty.
Absolutely, they're being cut.
And then we're seeing the police state being put into place to hold that structure.
Yep. Exactly. We have a two-tiered lower class here now forming. The lower end of it, and then the upper tier of the lower class. Not much middle class left. They'll always have a semblance of one just to give the illusion, and then you've got the elite at the top. I want to ask a question about technology and Orwell. Orwell was on the inside, and most people know that now. He, I wonder, could or could not have imagined, what's your best guess, the technology and the technological explosion that has occurred here in the latter part of the last century and now dominates. The technology is so advanced, so merciless, so ruthless, that it's really beyond the ability of most people to grasp. And they don't want to hear it. And they're hiding it from us, of course. That's the game. Nothing surprising there. But it's really amazing. I just wonder what Orwell would say.
Well, what I do in these in the talks on this current world tour, there's a section in it where I go into this in detail because it's fundamental to looking at the world as it is now and what's unfolding. I'll just give you an example of how it's one of the things I've been saying all these years. This plan for the world is projected long into what we call the future. And it's unfolding. I mean, I go into some really deep levels of reality and how it works. But if you look at Orwell, he talked about the telly screens. Well, these are the smart TVs, and the smart TVs we have now are only Mark 1 or Mark 2. I mean, the surveillance that they give, filming you and recording you in your own front room. But there was and then you look at Aldous Huxley, who was talking about the drugs and the genetics, which is all unfolding as well. So they were tapping into, for whatever reason, into this projected plan for the future. And about 20 years after Orwell's 1984, in 1969, there was a guy called Dr. Richard Day. He was a Rockefeller insider. He was an executive of Planned Parenthood. And in 1969, he was addressing pediatricians in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and just told them, for whatever reason, I don't know what he was doing, but he told them to not take notes and not record, because he was going to tell them how the world was going to change, because basically what he represented was going to change it, was changing it. And one doctor, Dr. Dunnigan, did take notes and did some interviews before he died about what Richard Day said that day. It's extraordinary.
It is amazing.
What he said in detail. Yeah. The reason I mention that is because he indicated in what he said was coming, and the way he described what was coming technologically, he described the World Wide Web. He certainly described smart TVs, and the World Wide Web was supposed to be invented around the 1989, something like that. And he talked about it in 1969, and of course, fundamental to this whole technological AI takeover, and I could talk at great length about it and what's happening in front of our eyes if we only could see it. It's fundamental to this whole takeover, and of course, the organization that claims credit for the emergence of the internet is DARPA, one of the most, if not the most sinister organization on Earth, Pentagon's technological development arm, which in league with Google is
pretty damn satanic,
driving this transhumanist agenda, which is not transhumanist, it's posthumanist,
because
they want the end of humanity as we know it.
Absolutely. This is not a joke. David, hold on. We have to break for a few minutes here. Get yourself a sip of tea or something. We'll come right back. For you who didn't maybe catch that, it's Dr. Richard Day, and a fellow named Dunnigan, had a meeting with Day, and after Day passed on, I guess, or maybe before, he wrote down and then actually recorded his memories of what Dr. Richard Day had to say. This is an extraordinary story, and you're the only person I've heard even mention Dr. Day for 15, 20 years.
What I do in these all day presentations is I go through what's happening in the world, and then I throw in quotes from him from 1969. It's devastating.
Oh yeah,
because he was describing it in detail what's happening now. How does he know that? Because this plan from the shadows is not made up in 5 minutes. It's been unfolding for a long time.
Indeed. All right, hold on. We'll be right back with hour two with David Icke right after this. Go to davidicke.com, and if you have a chance, don't miss David. He's coming to the U.S. to make several stops. It's a life-changing, unforgettable experience, and he's been at it so long. He has so much information, and I can see how an all-day event would literally have people walking out different people. Here's something, David, that I found. You mentioned Dr. Day and Orwell talking about things that were off in the future. This I found this years and years ago, and I have kept it ever since. It's fascinating. It's called Jules Verne's Dark Vision of Modern Life. You may not know about this, but it's fascinating. Let me read just a little bit of this, if I might. This is 1835, and this was written was 1863. What happened was a manuscript that was written by Jules Verne was rejected by his publisher, and it ended up being stuck in a safe, all right? And it was found in 1994 and was ultimately published. When it was written, Jules Verne was only 35 years of age, with one highly acclaimed book to his credit. When he began writing, and the book was called Paris in the 20th Century, by hand, no typewriters yet, his pages were illuminated by a small gas lamp as he worked away, electric lights still 15 years off in the future. Now get this one. The book's protagonist is named Michel Dufresnoy. He lived nearly a century into the future in this particular book. This is a future vision book that he's writing. The year was 1960. And as Verne wrote it, technology and automation had supplanted the culture of the 1800s. Elevators whisked people up and down buildings. Now remember, this is 1865 he's writing this. Elevators took people up and down tall buildings. Trains took them back and forth from the suburbs. Images, he called them facsimiles, this is 1865, could be sent thousands of miles away by what he called photographic telegraph. He predicted fax, something we might today not bat an eye over. Neon lights, unknown in 1863, illuminated Verne's avenues in Paris. Concerts were performed in 10,000-seat auditoriums by single artists using electric amplifiers. And of the, this is a quote now, of the innumerable cars that passed on the paved roads, most moved without horses. And he wrote this 25 years before the first prototype automobile ever appeared. He said they were propelled by an invisible force, the force of 20 or 30 horses by means of a motor run by gas combustion. Verne's heroes, however, and this is the dark side, quote, no longer stood in admiration of these marvels, end quote. He went on to say, they just quietly took advantage of them without being any happier because of their speeded pace and their American passion. One could feel the devil of money pushing them forward nonstop and without mercy. Jules Verne, 1863.
Well, that was spot on, wasn't it? It's amazing how many examples come up of how the future is predicted and how different people access that future, you know, maybe different, but one key way is that that future is projected by this hidden force. And the thing that much of the alternative media is going to have to face, as a lot of it already does, is that there's a question here, which I asked 20-odd years ago. When you look at how this this transformation of the world is unfolded step by step, and how people have been born, served this agenda, died, then other people have come in and served this agenda and died, and they were never going to see this this thing reach its fruition. So why would they do it? And why would they do it generation after generation? There has to be a common theme, a common force, which spans all these generations that have incessantly has pushed this agenda on, no matter who's been in the White House, who's been in Downing Street, who's right. been the CEO, or whatever. There's this, and there's a force in the background. And, you know, when you... look at ancient accounts and the accounts of ancient cultures and the oral and other history that has passed through to present time across the great spectrum of different peoples. There is a common theme. Christians call it demons. Islam calls them jinn. Gnostics call them archons. The Zulus call them Chitahuri. But the big penny drop is that they are talking about the same force. It's a force in the hidden, which is manipulating human society. And these people who are serving this agenda, generation after generation, pushing it on, that which knows what the future is designed to be long before that future unfolds, they are just vehicles for this force to impose that future step by step. Mm-hmm. And if you are part of that network, or you can tap into it in some way, then you can predict the future, because you are simply saying what the plan is. And like we said at the start, unless there's an intervention, that plan will happen. And so it's this force which even much of the mainstream, the alternative media, will not look at, because it is closed to anything beyond human, much as the mainstream is. I mean, you know, I've been ridiculed and dismissed for what I'm saying in these deeper levels of
oh, have you ever?
By the alternative media as much as I have by the
yes.
by the mainstream, because that too is in a mind prison. It's a perception prison, and it needs to open its mind up if we're going to really understand what's going on, to the fact there is a common force that spans these different people coming in and out, serving this agenda. What is that force? Because clearly it exists.
We need to talk a little bit about the alternative media. Certainly the hope for the future in many ways, but unfortunately, long since targeted, co-opted, penetrated, influenced, and outright controlled by the very same people who run the so-called mainstream media. The alternative media has been compromised. You folks, all of you, need to carefully pick your way through it. There are so many assets and agents, and the government, whatever that is, put so much money into it now. Shills, thousands of people work the internet just to cause arguments on forums and commentaries. They're phony journalists, phony truth tellers, phony programs. It's sad. It's very sad. Ultimately, there are also people who are just in it for ego. That's another problem. So with the blessings of the alternative media also conferred upon all of you, all of us who use it, is a responsibility to try to look between the lines the best you can, not to emotionally run after a clever headline and a cleverly written story, which is full of bogus material, which happens all the time. It's a real challenge to use the alternative media. It's the Wild West all over again.
Well, one of the things I would say, Jeff, picking that up, is if people see a headline which grabs them and they press on it, thus adding to the income of that site. And when they get through to the story on the site, there is nothing in the text to support the headline. They should never go to that website again.
Yes.
Because that is an insult and a disgrace to what the alternative media stands for. And there's so much of it going on. They call it clickbait, don't they?
Yeah.
There's so much of it going on. And in another thing that I'm looking at and shaking my head, is how parts of the alternative media who have talked about the fact that the political system is rigged and it doesn't matter who you vote for, the hidden hand gets in, who now are back in the political system, battling to get one candidate elected, and how Trump started talking about Muslims and the dangers of Muslims and all that stuff, I'm seeing that when there is a terrorist attack of some kind in, say, Europe or somewhere, then the what happened before is that people would take apart the official story and show that actually it doesn't add up. But what I'm seeing now in parts of the alternative media is that stopped, and a terrorist attack is now used as a means of making people kind of demonize
it's
Muslims.
Instant, it's instantly embraced. It becomes, these attacks become memes. Absolutely correct in that regard. No one is taking things apart much anymore. There are exceptions, like the work on Sandy Hook. There's some fabulous work done on Sandy Hook, one of these big events. There are big events all the time. But no one is given the chance, or really very few people want to dig in anymore. This, the pace, it's all about pace, David. As you know, it's keeping people looped from one thing to the next, to the next, the next new headline, the next new event, the next thing. And those, the pace keeps you well within the parameters, because you are so consumed with trying to process and inculcate truth and reality into the material you're getting that you don't have much time to be proactive anymore. It's tough. It's tough for people.
Yeah, I do understand that. But you know, when you understand that these events are created to provide an excuse, or to provide a way of demonizing people, or to provide an excuse for doing something that without the event you couldn't justify. I'm not saying that, you know, everyone can investigate every single thing that's happening, that so much is happening in detail, but to put aside the fact that problem reaction solution is a fundamental part of the way we're manipulated, and just almost accept the official story because your idea is to demonize Muslims. That is for me very sad and not acceptable, because what's happening here? And you know, the greatest form of human manipulation is the manipulation of emotion. Is that we're having a whole people demonized for the acts of a few. There was a reporter, Saeed Ramsey, in Europe, reported for a French TV channel, who infiltrated one of these terrorist, quote, terrorist cells in Europe. And what he said he found is that it was nothing to do with Islam. He said he called them fast food jihadists. He said the big lesson I saw was that there wasn't any Islam in this affair at all. There was no will to improve the world. There were only lost, frustrated, suicidal, and easy manipulated
youth. Oh, no, it's all secular. And who's running it? We know who's running it.
We know who's running it. And therefore, the alternative media's job is to point this out, not to use the official story to push a political agenda, which is fundamentally anti-Muslim, and at the same time doesn't question the even more fundamental involvement in all this of Zionism.
No, they don't. Zionism, that needs to be looked at by everyone. Very important player. Been around, 100, 130, 40 years? I guess it started around the 1880s. Came into fruition shortly after the turn of the century. You saw it, I guess, pretty much with the Bolsheviks that were imported into Russia by the banking cartel, pretty much. The Russian Revolution. Major event. Then look at Zionism there. All right, go back into that.
Yeah, but I hear people, some people in the alternative media saying, "Well, there's no evidence that that Zionism is fundamentally involved in this." I mean, what? There's no evidence that it's not. I mean, crikey, the evidence is unbelievable. And you know, I was looking at something a few days ago. There was was described as an Israeli strategist who was laying out what Israel needed to do 30 years ago. what Israel needed to do for its own benefit in the Middle East. And it was basically the history of the Middle East of the last 30 years that followed.
Yeah.
So, you know, all these things are part of what the alternative media should be looking at, but parts of it don't. They won't go there.
It's too accessible, David, to too many people who can literally just start. I think every other person on the planet will end up having their own talk program pretty soon. It's crazy. It's the access of it, the wonder of the access of the alternative media and the internet is also its curse. It is so easily corrupted and perverted by people who really shouldn't be in a position of trying to instruct or offer information to the masses. They just don't have the credentials.
Yeah, but and this is, the same as the mainstream media.
Same
you know,
thing.
We say, you know, you don't believe what you believe in, what you see in the mainstream media, and question everything. People must question everything in the alternative media as well.
Thank you for that.
Because, like I say, it's not just one thing. It's this vast spectrum which goes under the heading of alternative media, and it's done a fantastic job. I mean, you know, we wouldn't be where we are.
Where would we be without it? Yes, amen.
Exactly.
Sure.
But we just got to understand that actually, just because it's called alternative media, doesn't mean it's always telling the truth. Doesn't mean it doesn't have its own agenda, political or otherwise. And so everything must be questioned. What I say should be questioned and researched, and let people come to their own conclusions. But and not just accept things on face value just because someone said it. Whatever the label they give themselves.
Yeah, this whole issue of a golden opportunity to use the internet for reality. I don't like to use the word truth much anymore. Reality is also, again, and I said this earlier, tied into conferring upon all those who enter the world, the domain of the alternative media, a responsibility to themselves and those they care about to do their due diligence and their research and not grab a headline, as David said, and run with it. They've got to read stories. They've got to learn to recognize sources. It's like reading the food label on a product you're going to buy. It's the same thing. You've got to determine if it's toxic for you, if there are chemicals in it, mental chemicals, and mental corruption. It's a consumable good, the alternative media, just like food in a store.
Yeah, and this is important because, of course, these clickbait websites that produce outrageous headlines with no text to support them are a great means of discrediting the serious alternative media that is doing its
absolutely
research.
Yeah. When you go to a site and you see, excuse me, David, but I got to put this in. When you go to a site and you see a pop-up ad that comes up 15 seconds after you've tried to start reading something and the pop-up ad covers two-thirds of it, sometimes the entire site page. You know, that's a site you want to stay away from, as David said earlier. This is clickbait. It's exactly what it is.
Yeah, and you know, it's important that people do question everything that they see and get streetwise on it, because you know it's like we're saying earlier, you want, when you are seeking to program perception, you want control of the information that people receive. And so are they going to let the alternative media just go about its business unchallenged? Of course not. They're going to infiltrate it. They're going to put ludicrous sites up which discredit the alternative media. And they are, without question, especially if Clinton gets in, they are going to start trying to legislate against it. I mean,
we're in serious trouble. Yeah.
They've just come up with this phrase, alt-right, which again is something they want to paint the whole alternative media with. So you can see the pieces being moved into place for that, least because, you know, they do want a World War III. They do want to pitch the West against Russia and China. The pieces of that, I mean, I was writing about that a long time ago, that was the plan, to pitch the West against Russia, China, and the pieces are being moved into place with that. And, you know, if we had the alternative media that we have now in its scale. When they were running up to the invasion of Iraq, they would have found it even more difficult to justify that, because right. more and more people now are looking at the alternative media than were then, and would have been reading about the fact that this weapons of mass destruction was clearly a nonsensical excuse. And by the way, something I've been pointing out to the mainstream media in Australia, which I got on a lot for the first time, that the same people that told us there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq were the same people that gave us the official story of 9/11. It was hilarious to see their faces when I pointed that out. You could see their face go, you know, that's right, isn't it? Because we have this journalistic schizophrenia that you accept you were lied to in over Iraq. But you can't investigate 9/11 because they told us the truth. I mean, it's just nonsense. The same people. So if you have the alternative media, expanding in terms of audience, when they're trying to sell this Third World War, which they are moving the pieces into place, like I say, and they'll be pushing that more and more once Clinton got in the White House. You don't want the alternative media taken seriously and have free rein to say what it wants, because that's going to make it far, far more difficult for you to sell the idea that a war with Russia, China is random and has come about as a result of random events and decisions, when it's actually been planned for centuries.
This is actually playing out every bit as deliberate as World War I, World War II. I can only hope that somehow Russia can withstand the constant provoking that they're being abused with. They are just being bashed constantly by this Western Zionist media machine. It won't quit.
Yeah, well, the demonization of Russia is laughable. When I was in Australia, whole South China Sea situation with China was kicking off. And of course, the Ukraine was opening a front against Russia. You've got all this build-up of NATO and along the Russian borders. You've got now the German government talking about preparation for war and 10 days of food and water. Yeah, you can see it all moving into place. And then, of course, you've got this powder keg in Syria with Turkey now in there. It's actually invading Syria. That's what they've done. I mean, we're going after ISIS. Well, if you want to go after ISIS, you know, you need Pennsylvania Avenue. Stop selling their damn oil, too.
That's another.
That's a powder keg. It could kick off any time. So the pieces are being moved into place. And what we need to get across to people is that this is not happening by random accident and a series of random events. This has been planned way, way back. Into the 19th century, that there were going to be three wars, and they're unfolding. And the more we can get information out to people to point out that this is long planned, the harder it is to sell it. And you know, we are making progress. I mean, we've just had this extraordinary result in Britain, where the entire political spectrum was warning people and trying to frighten people into staying in the EU, and the majority of the people said we're out. There are things now happening where you can see that people are not as malleable and just being told what to do in the way that they have been up to this point. So we're really at a cusp. This next 3 years is going to decide a great deal.
Still in awe that the British got away with it. Everything was allied against them to stop the leave vote from succeeding. It did, and I think it actually passed by a much higher margin than was admitted in the press over there. That's my guess. They tried to keep it close so they could flip it the other way, but it was just too strong to leave. Now, the other thing I want to mention, in St. Petersburg, Russia, there was a conference recently, international multi-country conference, Vladimir Putin was there, and at the end of the conference, he got the Western media together and sat down with them, and he said, and he, you know, he's a very calm man. He doesn't express emotion or emote very, very often or very, very much. He got frustrated totally. He looked at those people, those journalists, and said, "What is wrong with you people? What does it take to get you to wake up to see what is being done right in front of your noses?" I'm paraphrasing. But as you said, the pieces on the chessboard are being set. And that's what he was saying. We are being dragged toward war. Why don't you people report that?
Yeah, well, I saw that that video. And, you know, we have now reached the point where people like him are talking about the fact that this Third World War is the pieces are being moved into place. And it's blatant to anyone that's looking on.
It's disgusting.
You have journalists. I mean, you know, you don't have to have an intelligence test to be a journalist. In fact, it could be a very bad career move. and also there is, in the moment, self-preservation. So, you know, some people might be able to see it, but how do they get it in the paper if they write it? What happens to their career if they write actually what's really going on? And this is where, you know, journalists need to realize that, you know, this is not something that they're isolated from. Where this world is going and the control that's being imposed is designed for them as well. I mean, they're working in a fundamentally controlled system as it is. But what we're seeing now are moves to increase that and to suppress it even more. I was talking to a former journalist a few days ago, a former investigative journalist on the News of the World, which is the paper that collapsed, the Murdoch paper, in the wake of phone hacking scandals, where they were hacking the phones of famous people and then printing the stories of based on what they heard. And of course there was a big trial eventually, and the paper shut down, and it was a massive scandal and attack on the mainstream media in Britain. But what this lady told me, and she was absolutely where she needed to be to know this was true, is that what really happened was that British intelligence sent someone in to the News of the World and one or two other papers as well to actually set up the phone hacking situation, which could then be exposed and as she put it, not just destroy a newspaper, but the frighteners on investigative journalism in Britain as a whole. And the story she told me certainly made sense, that the person that was sent in operated for with what she called a black bag company that is the arm's length representative of the British intelligence network, but he's not officially employed by it, thus there's plausible deniability. But actually, these what she called black bag companies operate for British intelligence and carry out stings and hacking of various kinds for them. And that this one person, who she named to me, went in to the News of the World and one or two other papers, like I say, and set up the phone hacking and got completely away with it. Because it never appeared in court. And that kind of made sense. So what I'm saying is that, you know, journalists need to understand that they're in the gun sight as well. If they think they're controlled now, well, you know, hang around, because there's nothing like where they where it's planned to go. And they have families and they have children that are going to have to live in the world that these people want to introduce. So it's basically time to have some bloody backbone and start standing up for what is true rather than just writing propaganda every day. What's the point in that except to get the paycheck and look your children in the eyes and tell them you can justify that to them?
Writing propaganda every day, reading press releases, kissing political fannies, It's really not a pretty sight. And if they step out of line, there are, as you know, you've been in the business for a long time. There are 10,000 people for every job. There are people who will do anything. They will sell their soul, sell their grandmother. It doesn't matter. Just to get on TV, get in the radio, get in the media. They want, it's the shortcut to celebrity. It used to be 75 years ago, people wanted to be motion picture stars. They found out that that was closed to them because it's a closed elite club. Now, and they found out that the alternative media is wide open. I can be a star. And that's propelling an awful lot of them. That's dangerous for all of us. So the media is not the media anymore. The media in America, as you well know, David, is really the fourth branch of government. It's the Ministry of Information and Mind Control and Propaganda and Social and Cultural Engineering and all the rest of it. And then you mentioned DARPA. Good grief, it doesn't get any darker than that. At least I hope not. There you go.
Yeah, and how many people, know in America the true nature of DARPA? How many many people know how fundamentally it's connected to Google, which explains why the director of DARPA Regina Duggan, moved from director of DARPA to a Google executive.
Yep.
This explains why Ray Kurzweil, the big promoter of transhumanism, the spokesman for Frankenstein, is a Google executive. These are things that media or journalists worth the name would have been pointing out, because it's fundamental to understand these connections. I mean, Google is an absolute monster, just like Facebook and all these internet giants that are merely the internet outgrowth from the mainstream media of newspapers, radio, and television that we had before, controlled again by the same networks. And, as newspapers fall in terms of their circulations and will eventually go out of business in the face of the electronic media, well, nothing changes, because the electronic media is controlled ultimately by the same networks that have controlled the newspapers, etc., up to this point. This former investigative journalist on the News of the World was telling me how that was structured, and how the paper she worked on was structured in this compartmentalized way. Mm-hmm. But basically, the journalists have no idea where the line of the newspaper is coming from, where the decisions of what they will report and what they won't report and how they will report it are actually coming from, because they only know the next level up. They don't know where it's really coming from.
Well, it's the same thing as a teller in a bank, the person at the window that takes your check and gives you cash. They don't know what the managers know. The managers don't know what the district managers understand, the corporation execs. And most of them don't even know about the Federal Reserve. They never even heard about it. Now, maybe they've heard about it, but they don't understand any of it. Here's another thing. You mentioned Google. Now, this is really critical. Google, I've been saying for a long time, Google is God, lowercase. Google is God. Google is such an enormous monstrosity on the planet. It is so evil. Google, just so you know, ladies and gentlemen, Google workers had 427 meetings at the White House over the course of Obama's 7.5 years in office, averaging more than one a week. Why? Ask yourself, why 427 meetings at the White House? What's going on with Google? There you go.
Something similar, not that many, but something similar happens with the British government as well. And what Google have done is change the name of much of their company to Alphabet to hide the extent of Google, because Google is such a buzzword in people's minds and so well known that when you see Google everywhere, I mean, what's Google doing in robotics? What's Google doing in transhumanist technology?
Genetics, so all of it.
They changed the name to Alphabet, so that it's Alphabet is such a terrible name but it's a name you can easily forget, and it's not a buzzword like Google. So they're just hiding the extent of what that Google giant monster is actually doing. And this is all fundamental. This DARPA Google connection is fundamental to what we were talking about earlier, yeah, about this, yeah, transhumanist agenda, because, you know, Kurzweil is talking about having people connected to their minds connected to the cloud, as he calls it, by 2030. And you know, I've got a new book out called Phantom Self, which refers to the fake self-identity. We are awareness. We are the state of being aware. We are infinite awareness. That's what we are. Everything else is detail. But Phantom Self is the self-identity with your name, your race, your income bracket, your country, your religion, whatever, which basically is the conscious mind perception of self-identity. And that focus of attention on what I call phantom self, self-identity, I am my name, I am my race, and all that stuff, disconnects us, that focus, from the greater, an influence of the greater consciousness beyond this program reality. But what I'm, there's a chapter in the book, and I call it transphantomism. And I call it that because it's taking this disconnection from conscious mind, self-identity, disconnection from between that and expanded awareness to a whole new level by connecting the conscious mind and what we call the human level, if you like, by connecting it to this this technological sub-reality that they're creating, which Kurzweil calls the cloud. The idea of transhumanism is to connect people technologically to this cloud, so the cloud does their thinking for them, so they get everything from the cloud. This AI, artificial intelligence, running this whole technological grid, this cloud, becomes basically the mind that is dictating the perceptions of the population. So the idea is that people become nothing more than a biological computer terminal on this cloud, which the internet is fundamentally a part, of course. Mm-hmm. And it's unfolding all the time. And they're telling us, I mean, it's not that they're hiding it anymore. No. People like Kurzweil are telling us, and they're telling us on the basis of the sales pitch, which is, by doing this, we'll become superhuman, but we won't. We'll become subhuman. That's the whole idea. And what they're doing is they're taking us, you know, here, kitty kitty, along this road where they start out with what you might call holdables, the smartphones and the tablets. They move on then to what they call wearables. These are the smart watches and the Google Glass and the Bluetooth. And now they're moving into what they call implantables, more and more and more. They're getting inside the body. Uh-huh. And the idea is to use that implanted technology, which people accept willingly because it makes me superhuman, to connect them to this technological sub-reality run by artificial intelligence. That's where this is going. That's what transhumanism is all about. And part of this,
they're taking away their humanity, David. They're
exactly
taking what's left.
It's part of this whole agenda is to create the synthetic human, which has does not procreate. That's done again technologically in laboratory means, exactly what Aldous Huxley predicted in Brave New World. This is why they are having these great studies to create a synthetic human. This is where a lot of this, and even the end of sex is where they want to go. So we're seeing the move in front of our eyes day after day. Oh, here's the latest technology, and everyone wants one. Let's queue in the middle of the night to be the first to get the next level of control. We're seeing in front of our eyes the destruction and the disappearance of everything that we've accepted to be human up to this point. So there is no human left. That's the idea.
That's where they're taking us. Yeah.
It's this force in the background that we talked about earlier that so much of the alternative media just dismisses and don't want to talk about. It's this force that's behind it. What we see, the people we see who are doing it, are merely the vehicles for this force. And we need to understand very, very urgently what's going on here, because we're being taken along this road, and so many people are walking along it. I mean, you know, the addiction to this technology is so fantastic.
It is.
For me, there's something coming off it. There's something coming off it in terms of some kind of artificial intelligence, whatever you want to call it. There's something coming off it that is making this addiction even more fierce and extreme than it would otherwise be.
It's an addiction to, it's a dehumanizing addiction that is bizarre to watch, because the sheep don't get it. And there's some smart sheep out there. They still don't get it. They think this technology is going to make them, as you said, superhuman. No, it's going to make them subhuman. It's gone.
Exactly. And we're being led along this road. And, you know, if you're in any way awake, it's an open book. But if you're not, if you are addicted to the phone, and of course, what generation is addicted to phones more than any other is the younger generations, of course, who are being brought up from birth now. I mean, you see grotesque sights like I saw recently in a restaurant where the parents are having their meal. And this baby in a high chair playing with a smartphone.
No.
It's
a baby.
Extraordinary.
Yeah, shame on those parents. Oh, they'll never get it.
But that's where we go. This is the most important thing for people to understand at the moment, and is this transhumanist agenda for connecting us to a technological reality that will do our thinking for us. And it's not just me saying that. Kurzweil saying that. Mm-hmm. Kurzweil saying that what will happen is that we'll be connected to this, what he calls this cloud, and then gradually the cloud will do more and more of our thinking until there's no human left. Saying that.
Yes, yes. AI will be your friend. AI will bury you. That's what
will
happen.
This is the question. This is the question that I ask in these talks and put forward some answers to it. What is AI? This is the question. I don't hear this being asked. What is AI? It's this buzz phrase, artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. Artificial intelligence will run fighter planes, will run the internet, will run this, will
make
run
your
that.
Hamburgers for you.
Yeah,
with
exactly.
Robots.
So then we ask the question, what is this artificial intelligence? Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what my answer is. This artificial intelligence is basically that which has been manipulating this world from the hidden for so long. It's a technological vehicle which humans are being manipulated to create, the smart grid and the smart technology and the based on Wi-Fi, the cloud. Mm-hmm. It's a vehicle that's being created for this hidden force, which has been given the name in this context, artificial intelligence, to take the frickin' world over. And by connecting humanity to the cloud, taking every human mind over. That is what's happening. And of course, much of the alternative media even doesn't want to go there. This is what's happening, and we need to understand it.
What a critically important thing, and I hope all of you will remember that as you make your way along. It is being pushed at us around the clock in ways that we're not even, I don't even see. These people have planned this for so long, and they're so damn clever about it. And there are, of course, EMF issues, embedded frequencies in every kind of electronic medium that can be used. I believe personally that the electric grid, David, is being used as a vehicle to put frequencies that will influence the masses. We're surrounded by wiring in our homes. We know that the electric grid can carry television, radio, cable TV, but it's not because those industries are separate. But the electric grid is not being discussed. And I tell this quick story. a friend of mine, Dr. Pat Flanagan. You know Pat, know of him.
Yep.
He went over to a friend's house. He walked into the garage. The guy was a kind of a garage genius, and he had a scope on, and there was a particular wave on this oscilloscope, and Pat recognized it immediately as the Lilly wave. And he said, "What are you doing with the Lilly wave? You know, what kind of work are you doing?" And the guy turned and looked at him, and he was kind of shocked, according to what Pat said. And he says, "You never guess where that's coming from." And Pat said, "Where?" And he pointed to the wall plug. He said, "It's in the electric grid, and it didn't just get there by itself."
This is precisely what's happening. Whether it's that, or whether it is the astonishing increase in atmospheric technologically generated radiation, whether it's this smart technology, whether it's the Wi-Fi cloud, which of course they're putting satellites up now to make sure there's no area of the Earth that's not covered by Wi-Fi
of the world.
Yeah, and this is not clearly not so that everyone, even in the desert, can be on the grid, on the web. It's because the cloud is the technological sub-reality in all its various forms, including the electrical grid. And therefore, they need to make sure no one can escape anywhere from the cloud, which
nowhere
they are
to hide.
Designed to be connected to. This is what's happening. We're seeing a whole sub-reality being created, which humanity is planned to be tapped into, and therefore the ability to expand your awareness beyond that cloud will then be closing in on near impossible. That's the idea. That is what's happening in front of our eyes all the time as this technological society goes on moving. And if you've got to connect the dots. You've got to connect the dots with it, and then you see the picture. If you just see it in isolation, it's just this technological madness or addiction to smartphones. Oh, that's not good. And do you know all these studies that show that this technological these technological smart sources are rewiring the brain so that they have a lower attention span, etc. Oh, that's not very good, is it? Well, connect all the dots. Connect what Kurzweil's saying. Connect all the dots, and you see what's happening. And that is what I've just described.
Well, summed up remarkably, the cloud. It sounds like a sci-fi movie plot. The cloud takes over human consciousness, takes over humanity, takes over the planet. We're run by the cloud after 75% of the world population is destroyed in the coming World War III. The cloud. What a vision.
Something else that Kurzweil says is nanobots, these nanotechnologies, also known as smart dust and many other names. Nanobots will infuse all matter around us with information. Rocks, trees, everything will become these intelligent creatures. In other words, they'll become this part of this whole control system, this whole sub-reality.
So how
are they infusing everything, rocks, trees, everything, as he says, with these nanobots, with this nanotechnology? Well, one of the ways they're doing it is chemtrails. That's one of the things that's coming out of chemtrails, is nanotechnology on a vast scale, and in other ways too. All this nanotechnology in food and everything, it's just passing it out and putting it in human bodies and putting it in the environment to as part of this whole new technological what they want to be eventually, a synthetic world full of synthetic people connected to a technological control system.
Yeah.
That's where we're going. And you know, they're not talking about, you know, 100 years from now. Kurzweil's talking about this basically being in place, or at least the start of it, by 2030.
They're in a hurry.
And they're in a hurry, Jeff, for the reason we talked about earlier. They know humanity is awakening to a more expanded view of everything. Mm-hmm. And although this technological control system has been planned all along, by this force outside the human realm. The desperation and the speed that they want to push it in is motivated by knowing that there is a limit on how long they can not get this control before humanity is awakened enough to see the game in enough numbers to make a difference. So this next period, this next 3 years will be very, very important, but the next 10 years will be extremely important to where this world goes.
It will tell the tale. It will tell the tale. David Icke, September the 10th, New York, in Grand Prospect Hall. September 17th, in Los Angeles, Irvine Marriott. September 24th, in San Francisco, Crane Way Pavilion. Have a great tour, David. I hope it's a sellout. I'm sure it will be. It's really good to get caught up with you, as always.
Yeah, it's been good, Jeff. Thanks very much.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
Good night. David Icke, Worldwide Wake Up Tour, heading for America. Once again, New York, September 10, LA, September 17, San Francisco, September 24th. All right, that's our program tonight. Lots to think about, and we will be back with you tomorrow. Have a good night and a good day tomorrow.